So my wife went away this weekend. She actually left Thursday afternoon, Friday, Saturday, and I came back at like 11 o'clock last night. And I had all the kids in bed by the time she got back, which was my three-year-old's a miracle. But she'd always told me about this thing that happens. And I believed her, but I kind of thought she might be slightly exaggerating until this weekend. So when mom's gone, and this happens every once in a while, but rarely, I'm gone more than she is. You moms don't get to go to the bathroom even. I was going to the bathroom, and that's, you know, I put a show on. I'm thinking this is my quiet time. They've all been fed, everything. Like, everything had been taken care of. And all of a sudden, like, you can kind of see the little, like, shadows. And I'm like, there's people, like, at the door. And then there's, like, a little, it's like, y'all know I'm in here. Like, Dad? I'm like, what? I found a dime. Okay? So keep it. All right? And so, like, I thought I got rid of them. I opened the door, and they're all just sitting there. So then it became like, you know, I'm going to beat this. And so there, we have three bathrooms in our house, thanks to Chris. So I'm not allowed in the girls. We have a men's and a women's downstairs. Some of them in our house, and I'm not allowed in the women's one. Heidi's not here. So I went there first. Because they know I'm not allowed in there, so there's no way they're going to find me, right? So, son, you know, kind of the same thing. I'm hearing a little bit of rustling. They bumped into the shoe rack and knocked some shoes down. I'm like, oh, man, they found me. And so finally I come out. It's not just them. It's the dogs, too. They're, like, sitting there. Like, guys, I don't have food in here. It's not. So a third time, I'm like, I got this. I'm going to tell them I'm going to go have a shower, right? Which really means that's the time to go and try and sneak the cookies that are in the freezer and all the other stuff. And I know that, and so I kind of hid what I really didn't want eaten because I was saving that for me. And so I go and, you know, turn the shower on. I mean, this is sad, right? Turn the shower, but I'm gonna find a way. Y'all know what happened. I open the door. Dad, can I have a shower now? No. Like four of them. And that's with three of them gone. You know, and so I'm going to read 1 John 3. Some of this might make sense a little bit. What marvelous love the Father has extended to us. Just look at it. We're called children of God. That's who we are, really are. But that's also why the world doesn't recognize us or take us seriously, because it has no idea who he is or what he's up to. But friends, that's exactly who we are, children of God. And that's only the beginning. Who knows how we'll end up? What we know is that when Christ is openly revealed, we'll see him. And in seeing him, become like him. All of us who look forward to his coming stay ready with the glistening purity of Jesus' life as a model for our own. All who indulge in a sinful life are dangerously lawless, for sin is a major disruption of God's order. Surely you know that Christ showed up in order to get rid of sin. There's no sin in him, and sin is not part of the program. No one who lives deeply in Christ makes a practice of sin. None of those who do practice sin have taken a good look at Christ. They've got him all backwards. So my dear children, don't let anyone divert you from the truth. It's the person who acts right who is right, just as we see it lived out in our righteous Messiah. Those who make a practice of sin are straight from the devil, the pioneer of the practice of sin. The Son of God entered the scene to abolish the devil's ways. People conceived and brought into life by God don't make a practice of sin. How could they? God's seed is deep within them, making them who they are. It's not in the nature of the God-begotten to practice and parade sin. Here's how you tell the difference between God's children and the devil's children. The one who won't practice righteous ways isn't from God, nor is the one who won't love brother or sister. A simple test. It doesn't end there, by the way. This passage it's tough. I'm just going to be honest about that. It's a tough one. Every time I've read it and every time I've preached on it, the exact same thing happens in my own body language as well as everybody else in here. You kind of can go from this to this. When I was reading through it and praying through this week, man, every sin issue I got came to mind, popped into my head. That's not the point. That's not where he's going with this. One time I was working at a church, and I made a decision, man, this would be almost 20 years ago, that I am who I am 24/7, like it or not. Sometimes that works to my advantage. Sometimes it works to my disadvantage. And when I entered into pastoral ministry, when I was working at a church, it definitely went towards my disadvantage. Where I was having some conversations with people that I just thought were real legit conversations that I would have had on Monday through Saturday. But we were having it on a Sunday, and we were having it in a church. And I got challenged on it. My challenge back, and this is really where I still stand, was if we're not who we really are on Sunday, if that's not the one day of the week that we have the most freedom to be completely exposed, then we got it backwards. If we're one way throughout the week, and another way whenever we're at a church function or here on a Sunday morning or walk through those doors, something's backwards. Either we're faking it then or we're faking it now. The world is full of sin and it wants us to just accept it. It wants us to be me first. It wants us to just say, you know what, I can live however I want to live and think however I want to think. I can do whatever I want to do as long as it's not infringing on the rights of somebody else. It's always infringing on the rights of somebody else if you're going to get your way. That's the first piece. The second piece is, no, actually, we're called to live a life that emulates Christ's life. We're called to love one another. We're called to take care of one another. We're called to be in community with one another. To be real with one another. But that's so, so hard. And I'm saying that because I live through this too. Right? I make the conscious decision, oh, do I tell them about that or do I just let that go? Oh, what will they think about me when they figure that out about me? Well, if they knew that about my life, then they probably wouldn't listen to me. For this is the original message we heard. We should love one another. We must not be like Cain, who joined the evil one and then killed his brother. And why did he kill him? Because he was deep in the practice of evil, while the acts of his brother were righteous. So don't be surprised, friends, when the world hates you. It's been going on a long time. The way we know we've been transferred from death to life is that we love our brothers and sisters. Anyone who doesn't love is as good as dead. Anyone who hates a brother or sister is a murderer. And you know very well that eternal life and murder don't go together. This is how we've come to understand and experience love. Christ sacrificed his life for us This is why we ought to live sacrificially for our fellow believers and not just be out for ourselves. If you see some brother or sister in need and have the means to do something about it, but turn a cold shoulder and do nothing, what happens to God's love? It disappears, and you made it disappear. My dear children, let's not just talk about love. Let's practice real love. This is the only way we'll know we're living truly, living in God's reality. It's also the way to shut down debilitating self-criticism, even when there's something to it. For God is greater than our worried hearts and knows more about us than we do ourselves. You know, over and over and over in Scripture, it talks to us about loving others and, you know, treating others as we want ourselves treated and loving others as we want to be loved, you know, a golden rule. I'll use an example from my other work. I was speaking on a passage, I don't think it was this one passage, it was similar to this, and this young lady came up to me afterwards, and she said, well, that's easy then. I go, what do you mean? Just explain. She goes, well, I don't love myself, so I don't have to love anybody else. Okay. And as much as we talked more, but I think in her situation and the ability for her to be bold like that and say what was just going on, I think she was a lot more honest about it than I've been and that many of us are. It goes back to that first line. We are children of God. We have to realize that God has actually designed, created, and gifted every single person in here for His glory. Every single one of us. He is the designer. He is the potter. And He made you and myself knowing full well what our gifts would be, what our weaknesses would be, what our struggles would be in life. He knew. And He still wants to use every single one of us for His glory and to impact people and to show His love to this world that rejects Him. He created you for that. He created me for that. And here's the scary part. You will do more for God through your weakness than through your strength. Because in your weakness, He shines through. Even when it comes to sin. There's still free will. You still have a choice. I still have a choice. And when we choose to sin, there's a very big difference between the believer and the non-believer. If you're a believer and you're following Christ and you're walking with Christ, and we've gone over this in John 1, 1 John 1 and 1 John 2. If you sin, you will confess those sins. You'll seek God out. And the whole bit about repenting is turning from that sin and trying to walk forward. Not saying it won't happen again. Not saying you won't struggle with it. I work with folks in addictions 24/7, man. It's crazy to see. But as a believer, you know there's that hope. You know there's this God that will forgive you. There's this God that will walk with you, that is journeying with you, and that you're not alone. You know that there's this God that created you. How many times in your life have you gone through something, or have you done something, where at the time you had no idea, you were pretty much probably yelling out, God, why me? Or God, why did I do that? And then he's got this magical way, maybe years later, of putting somebody right in front of you, sometimes days later, who's going through the exact same thing. And then you got another choice to make. You're looking at him, you're listening to him. And I'll give you an example. So I was an associate pastor at another church, and we went and we had like men's accountability groups. We called them life groups. We journeyed together. I don't like the accountability term, but we'd meet, you know, every couple weeks and just do life together. And for four of us for breakfast, me and three other guys. And we did this for about 4 years. And about 2 years in, we decided to open up the conversation we had a monthly men's breakfast. And so we opened up, so there was about 30 guys there. And usually somebody would just get up and talk for like 10 minutes. We had really awesome food, and then that was it. But today we did something, that day we did something different. So one of my buddies and I sat there. And what we did was we invited everybody into our conversations. And essentially, like, we were the only two in the room and everybody was just watching a show. And he and I were 100% candid and did exactly how we usually would do it. And we talked about our struggles and the things, the sin issues that we had. And both of us are different. We both had different things that we were working through. So we did that and had no idea what was going to happen because of it, and looked out, and there's a few guys that were crying and a few guys that, you know, came up afterwards and said, hey, can we meet up? And so the one young man said to me, he goes, hey, can we go to coffee? I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. So we go to coffee, and he's sitting across from me, and I've literally had over 100 of these conversations since before then and since then. Pastor, you know, I know you think you know me pretty well, and I know, like, I look like I've got everything together, but there's something that you should probably know about me. And I just looked at him and I said, oh, the porn thing? He goes, what? How'd you know? I said, well, it's 2013. You're male. And you called me to go to coffee to talk about something. So it's either that, something's going on in your marriage, you got anger issues, or you will blow me away and shock me with something else. Now in my world, it's, okay, are you addicted to meth, heroin, fentanyl, or... It's interesting though, right? So I know this is a little aside, but for him, that was the biggest step in the world, right? To talk to me about that. And we had a great conversation. He's working on that, and it's awesome. Today, with a lot of the folks I work with, that's not even an issue. Like, that's just normal. Why wouldn't you do that? This is a sin issue. My addiction to fentanyl, that's my sin issue. It's nothing to do with watching porn and all that. That's all normal. They've normalized that. And how I treat women and how I do this, that's just normal. That's just how it goes. Why? That's not an issue. This is my issue. When I talk to an alcoholic, the biggest issue for alcoholics is those people that are on drugs. They think they're crazy and stupid. When I talk to somebody on drugs, they say, well, at least I'm not an alcoholic. The big issue for us all is the original sin issue. It's the Cain and Abel. Are you turning from God? Are you turning to God? Where does your help come from? And this is not on the pastors of the church or the leaders in the church to solve this thing. This is actually on all of us. If you call Crossroads home, or whatever church you call home, have we created, or are we creating a place where people can be real? Have we created a place where we can get together as believers and talk about this stuff? I know for a fact that I can go to our pastors and folks in leadership, because I have, with my stuff, and be treated like that. They are there. They've got it. I know that for a fact, because I've experienced it. But what about the rest of us? I'm going to be slightly candid here. Shocker. My whole goal when we left Euro Alliance, and I started doing stuff at Ruth and Naomi's, and my family told me that I'm not allowed to choose where we go to church. And I said, I fought a little bit. Then I said, okay. But my wife had a point. She says, we followed you for the last 10 plus years. And wherever you were pastoring is where we went to church. And so you're not choosing. We're going to choose. And so we went and for the first time in our lives, really church shopped. I swear that worship pastors are sent out a packet of which songs we're going through that week, because we went to like all these different churches, and there was usually like three or four of the exact same songs. And the funniest part was three pastors preached on the same passage. It was the prodigal God. And they were all used the same reference, which was a great book, by the way, by Timothy Keller. And so we're doing this, and I'm sitting back, and the kids, like, they'd have these discussions. Every time I'd try to pipe in, they're like, no, shut up. And I'm like, all right. And one day, we were going to go back. We did down to two churches, right? And this is where I'm getting involved. So I'm like, all right, now we got down to two churches. And we slept in. We were going to go back to one of them. We slept in. And so my wife's like, theirs was at 10. And it was Father's Day. And she goes, oh, well, she starts Googling churches and start times. Oh, there's that Crossroads church too. We haven't checked it out yet. So why don't we just go there, since you want to go to church for Father's Day anyways, and we'll check it out. And so we go there, and remember that Dad's root beer they gave us for Father's Day? Yeah, all the guys are like, yes, we remember, yeah. And some of you that stole it from your dad, you remember too. So it's that Sunday. So win for me, I'm done, I'm good. And they're going, we went into the, did all the stuff, kids went to kids' church, listened to Rob and all that stuff, and we come out, and my son Manny goes, well, I guess we know what church you're going to now, don't we? And the big thing, the only thing that I held was I said, I'm cool with all this, except I have veto power over two things. One, I want to make sure that the pastor's theologically sound. And I was like, in my mind, I mean, I can't really, there's no grade that we get. And I said, that one checks out. I've known Rob for years. I go, second, would I be comfortable bringing the folks from the street to this church? That was the second criteria. And to be honest, I didn't know. And to be honest, I still don't know. Because if they walk through those doors, when you're working with folks at that level, and I love what I do, but it's so raw that if they even feel they're expected to put a mask on, they won't make it through the second set of doors. The second that they walk through the doors, you will be accused of being judgmental. It's not, you will be accused of being judgmental. Somebody will. By looking wrong, by not acknowledging, by, are you able to handle it? Another piece, and here's a big one. Sin will be exposed. Period. When we adopted one of our kids, what they were doing is they were living, they had this life here, and this life here. We were just their foster parents at the time in the transition. And they were totally different people in these different circles. And I'll never forget, we came together at decades. It was when we were finalizing the adoption. They were going to move into our home permanently. And the birth parents, foster parents, social workers, and us, we all met at decades on a big table in the back. And I've never seen a more uncomfortable human being in my life, because they knew that all these different stories and all these different lives were sitting right there in her seat. And she had to decide which person she was going to be. And I've talked to her about this since then, and she's okay with me sharing. She didn't know what to do. She actually went in and out of these different personalities as the different people talked to her, because all her worlds had come together. If we're truly doing what the church has been called to do, then inevitably all those worlds will come together. And they'll all be worshiping here together. And it'll be a very beautiful thing. But it'll be really, really hard. Your sports teams, your friends from school, folks from your work, folks that you deal with from your work that you don't really like to deal with from your work. Like my family, when we come in, we have vegans and vegetarians, and maybe you're the server. You don't like us. We know that. We're okay with that. I don't like our orders. I'm like, meat, potatoes, call it good. Those people will be here. The person that robbed you will be in the same room as you. The person that hurt you will be in the same room as you. Are we able and willing to deal with that? Because if you are a follower of Christ, you will be. Doesn't make it easy. He never says it's easy. It's just the reality. Jesus died for the same people that put him on the cross. He died as much for them and to conquer death for them as he did for anybody else. Jesus died for the guy who would kill his followers and then later become the largest and biggest evangelist the world has known. My dear children, let us not just talk about love, let us practice real love. It's the only way we'll know we're living truly, living in God's reality. Skip ahead. And friends, once that's taken care of, And we're no longer accusing or condemning ourselves. We're bold and free before God. We're able to stretch our hands out and receive what we asked for because we're doing what he said, doing what pleases him. Again, this is God's command. To believe in his personally named Son, Jesus Christ. He told us to love each other in line with the original command. As we keep his commands, we live deeply and surely in him, and he lives in us. And this is how we experience his deep and abiding presence in us, by the Spirit he gave us. I am not even close to being a perfect person. To be honest, sometimes I'm a lousy pastor. There's times where people come up and the shepherding piece of walking with them and my actual response is, suck it up, buttercup. And there's other times where I get it right. I'm not the perfect husband or the perfect father. My wife really needed my help to get her ready to go for her run, and I had too many other things on my mind, so I just didn't do it. That wasn't right. My kids, yeah, there was times where I did great this weekend. There's a couple where, it would have been better to have Heidi there. I got lots of stuff that's in my life that I got to work through and I'm still working through. But at the end of the day, I'm a child of God. At the end of the day, he's there for me. And unlike me, as I'm sitting at that bathroom door, when he comes out, he opens up his arms, he picks me up, he embraces me. And he says, I know you're sitting there the whole time. Every single one of us has a purpose. And the funny part is, oftentimes we think it's this thing and we find out, no, actually, I was using you right here. But it's okay. You keep focusing. Like, you think that. I used this example before. I played rugby for Trinity Western, and Tim Agasanzo was on my team. And we won the championship, and it was a great team. But in that year, what really happened for me, I thought I was just going to be an athlete, and this was, you know, I was driven. I finally found my sport. I'm going. I'm going to try to get big and do all that. Looking back, I was never meant to be that. But man, did I need that group of guys at that time in my life. Because what I'd come from was a group of guys that I drank with, partied with, for a couple years straight. And these guys weren't about that. They were about this guy, Jesus. And in that time and that place is what I needed. Sport was a fun part of it, but I needed that community. I really pray that we become, I know there's pockets here, but we become that community for people where when they come in here, they if they don't know Jesus, they find Jesus. If they know Jesus, they find others that know Jesus and that will do life with them. So my challenge, there we go. My challenge for each of us, myself included today. Some point during this week, take some time sit down with God and just get real with Him. Lay it all out there. And at the end of it, don't ask, what are you calling me to do? At the end of it, just thank Him for being there with you.